Welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm really happy that you're here. So come on in, sit down, hope you have your lunch. Let's get settled in, and I think it's going to be a really great hour. So in the spirit of getting our conversation organized, I'd love to introduce you to Jen Rader from PMA, who has a couple of housekeeping tips so you can actively and fully participate in today's discussion. Jen?
Hi, thanks, Cindy. Hello, everyone. So we want this to be a really engaging session, so we need your participation, and there's a few ways that you can go about doing this. So one is we're going to have a few polls embedded throughout the session, and you'll need to have your mobile phone ready. You can also ask questions in the Q&A function, and we'll try to answer those throughout the session, and if we can't get to answer them, we will follow up with you after today's session. You can also join us by sharing your experience or making a comment or asking more clarifying questions using the chat feature. And lastly, if you're having any technical issues, you can use the moderator chat to ask our moderator for technical assistance. So thank you, everyone, and back to you, Cindy.
Thanks, Jen. So for those who have returned to Lunch with Leaders, welcome back. For those of you who are new, I wanted to say thanks for joining us. Lunch with Leaders is a safe space for us leaders to come together and talk about some of the challenges that we've been facing, especially during some of the unprecedented times of the recent week. So it's safe. You can connect and share with peers like you who may be having the exact same challenges that you are. It's also a great opportunity for you to share some of the things that you and your team have been doing during this time, because some of your ideas may fuel somebody else's ideas. So for those colleagues who are missing out on today's session, if you go to the Lead Strong webpage, the recordings of our past sessions are all available, and this one will be available for viewing as well. So let's talk a little bit about today. So much stress for all of us. So we want to talk about coping with both yourself and your colleagues during stressful times. There's a real connection between our emotional health and the professionalism behavior that we see throughout the workplace. So we have a couple of objectives today. One, we want to explore practical tips for taking good care of ourselves, especially emotionally. Two, we want to learn how to recognize emotional red flags, both within ourselves as well as within our colleagues and our employees. Three, we want to talk a little bit about how do we deal with people who are acting out or they're being unprofessional during this really stressful time? And what's like, when do you have to take action? When do you ignore it? So this is a gray area. So we're going to discuss some of those things as well as some of the strategies. So we love hearing from you. This works because you're so active in the chat, both sharing your stories, asking good questions, participating with one another. So I'd love to hear from you. So we'll have a couple of different ways, but I invite you all to share your thoughts, feedback, and experience in the chat window. If you have a specific question that you'd like to pose to our colleague, Jody, who I'll introduce in a second, or to me, use the Q&A function. If you wouldn't mind, use the chat for the chat and the question and answer for just questions, because I'm looking at both, and sometimes when it's chat and both, it's hard to kind of get to your specific questions. We may not be able to answer every question, as Jen said, but we're going to try to, and I love hearing from you, and I want to pull your voices into this conversation as well. So let's start with you. I know I've asked this, and this is the fourth week in a row, but I really want to know. Let's do a quick anonymous poll. Using your cell phone, text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333, and then you'll be activated in our Poll Everywhere technology. You'll receive a response saying that you're now in the survey. So if you have a problem, just notify us in the chat and someone will help you. So for those who are already in the Poll Everywhere, here's my question again. What emotions are you feeling today? I'm tracking this week over week, so I really want to take a temperature pulse check of each of you who are attending, see how you're doing. So what emotions are you feeling today? So while you're answering that, it's my great excitement and honor to introduce you to today's special guest, Dr. Jody Foster. Jody is a clinical professor of psychiatry in the Perelman School of Medicine. She's also for a long time been the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at Pennsylvania Hospital. Jody, she doesn't tell you this, and she'll probably kill me for telling you this. I know her pretty well, but she was kind of like the first Doogie Howser. She completed undergrad and med school in record time, went on to get her MBA at Wharton, and she has written books about professional behavior, and she's also the assistant dean for professionalism. So we're so lucky to have her here because she's an expert in this area. So let me welcome Jody. Jody, I'm so glad that you're my partner today for Lunch with Leaders.
Thank you so much. I'm all right, Cindy. Thank you. I'm really excited.
Hey, Jody, we're experiencing your video is freezing. We're having a little feedback there.
How's this?
Yeah, much better. Hopefully it was okay. Just a temporary thing.
Okay,
I'm glad
can you hear me now?
Yep, I can. Yeah, okay. So welcome. Why don't we take a look to see what the results of today's Poll Everywhere slide are. Let's see what emotions. Okay, tired, hopeful, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, better. I like that. Good, calm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely a positive change.
Yeah, that is a positive change from last week and definitely from the week before. So, Joan, yeah. I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen such a continuum in a wide range of emotions. Maybe it's just because we haven't asked on a weekly basis, how are you feeling or what emotions are you feeling? But it seems to me like we're seeing emotions like never before. Any reason that this is so emotionally filled this time? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that the issue is that this COVID brings sort of something for everyone. I mean, the emotions themselves are not necessarily new, although we are seeing people who are experiencing, you know, symptoms and feelings that they haven't really found themselves experiencing previously. But the issue is that every iteration of how this virus has affected our lives, whether we're, you know, somebody who's on the front line working in the thick of it every day, or whether we're suddenly at home and adjusting our lives to working in a different environment and feeling isolated or whatever it is, every person has some reaction to this. And I think that the gamut of the variety of feelings and emotional experiences that people are having as a result of this crisis has been really quite remarkable. So I think it's not necessarily that the emotions are new or that they're unusual. It's just that all of us is feeling something. And I don't think there's a single person who doesn't have something to say about how this has affected them. And certainly that has, you know, emotional impact.
Yeah, I think that's a well said. What's so interesting about the coronavirus and this global pandemic is that every single person around the entire world is experiencing this same event. And yet it's so idiosyncratic in terms of how each of us individually are experiencing this and what we feel, what we think about it. So it's so interesting to kind of be in this worldwide phenomenon and yet all of us having such different experiences.
Right. I've had people approach me and almost apologize and say, I know this is just a problem of the worried well, or I know this is a privilege problem. It doesn't matter. I mean, everyone's experience is everyone's experience, and we're all experiencing something, and we have to kind of be attentive and aware of these experiences so that we can take the best care of ourselves and the people around us that we can.
Has there been literature or research done around how we move through something as big as this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole field of disaster psychiatry, and many have probably already seen this slide, but this is a slide developed by SAMHSA. And the purpose of the slide is not so much to, you know, insist that, for example, everybody become disillusioned, but rather to normalize the experiences that we're having. And I think if you go through these phases, it's going to be very hard not to resound with some of it and not to be able to relate to the experiences. I mean, if you think through way at the beginning when we were hearing about this virus called coronavirus. I remember my son bringing it home from school and being concerned about it, and then speaking to my sister, who's an infectious disease doctor, saying, "Ah, it's nothing." And, you know, time passing as we're sort of watching and watching, and then the impact hits. And that's when all this burst of activity, suddenly some of us are home, suddenly, you know, those of us who are continuing to be at work are suddenly very concerned about the way we're working and want appropriately to be protected. And suddenly a lot of, I mean, the primary emotional states we're talking about here are, change and the unknown and the associated fear and anxiety that comes with. Nobody likes change and nobody likes the unknown. So remember it, we've all been involved in it, where we're suddenly doing, you know, everything we can to make sure we're protecting ourselves, that we're protecting our families, that we're protecting our patients, and how do we do it correctly, and coming up with policies and procedures and just jumping into action. And this is the phase, you know, for those of us at work where we're working in a different way on the front lines, and those of us who are working in different settings on policies and procedures are sort of glued to our chairs for 20 hours a day and you know, really kind of working at something. Interestingly, what we do have seen in the literature is that in this heroic phase, we've actually seen a decrease in burnout, which is the thing that, you know, we've heard so much about. And yet something about this crisis has reconnected us with our purpose in being here and doing this. And so, you know, another one of the positive aspects of, and everyone's celebrating our heroism. So, you know, we go through this, and again, we all have to remember this. This is a phase we were just in. And then they're in place. The policies are done. We know how to do this. We're taking care of patients. And that's when we plateau a little bit. And that's the honeymoon phase. But, you know, you'll note from the graph and you'll note probably from your lives that honeymoons don't last that long. And so, you know, there's this plateau and you know, it's sort of the machine is moving along, but then time passes and it's still happening. And people are saying, are we never going to have a meeting in person again? Are we ever going to be able to, you know, sit at the same desk again, you know, and then we're starting to ask these questions, and the emotional exhaustion of having to do the work we were already doing, but doing it in a different way with a lot of new overlay, it's exhausting. And for many of us, that's when either some symptoms emerge, or maybe it's when we have some sort of existential crisis questions about what am I doing with my life, or whatever it may be. But this is the phase when it's happening. And if you'll notice from the curve there, at the bottom there, it says trigger events. And so you add in a trigger event, like, you know, those events that led to the recent protests, and that can lead to more disillusionment. And by the same token, maybe something wonderful will happen, and then the disillusionment will lift. But you know, it's a phase. It doesn't mean you have to feel disillusioned. What it really is speaking to is just the ongoing drag and the emotional exhaustion associated with, you know, the unknown of what's new normal going to look like, how long is this going to last. And as you see from the graph, this can last up to a year. And that, of course, depends on when you've decided time zero starts. And then at that point, you know, you start to regroup, you start to recover, you start to rebuild and figure it out.
Let me ask you to pause right there. Let me go to the audience. So what phase do you think you are? Are you still in heroic adventure time? Are you in the honeymoon phase? Are you entering into the disillusionment phase? What phase, where are you right now, would you say? I know for me, Jody, and we've talked a little bit about this. At first, it was like, I felt like, not that I've ever done drugs except alcohol, but I felt like I was so like charged up. I like had so many endorphins like pumping. It was like keeping me active. I was at this computer like 17 hours a day, 7 days a week. We were in it. And now it's like, oh, it's kind of hard to get out of bed. I'm tired. And it feels like a huge drop off. Do you think that's something like disillusionment phase kind of symptoms?
Well, it depends how you're feeling about it. It may be that you don't have quite as much to do, and so you're allowing yourself to stay in bed, or it may be that you don't want to get in bed because you're not feeling quite so well. It really depends upon your personal experience. By the same token, there are people who have been at the front line and doing very specialized work and working harder than ever. And their sort of booby prize at the end is that they're just going to get to keep doing that and work, and they're just exhausted. And when am I going to get off the treadmill? So everybody is having a different experience. For some people, it's I can't bear not to be able to, sit at a table with my friends and have a dinner party. Whatever it is, for some people, there's grief because they've had loss. For some people, the fear of contagion is still, just dragging and draining.
Hey, Joan, we're having some technical problems at times. You sort of break up, and now your video is out. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. I'm not sure what we can do to fix it, but just wanted to let you know that's happening. So we're seeing a lot of the audience is in the disillusionment phase. There are some who are really taking on the new beginning, and it's setting in, and they're excited about it. And then some kind of vacillate back and forth between disillusionment. I've heard in the last several weeks, people a lot more often are talking about the new normal and coming to some acceptance. And we're seeing that a little bit with our leadership population. Some people are definitely excited to see what this new beginning could look like, because there could be some really good things that come out of it. And many are still kind of mired in their own grieving, associated with some of the temporary loss, and the uncertainty, as you said. So what do we do about some of these feelings? They're kind of not, I don't know, some of the happier emotions seem just easier to deal with. What do you do with all these feelings? I mean, I kind of live up here a lot of times, like, and now I'm having all these feelings. I'm sure other people may be in a similar boat. Like, what do you see, and what do
I
we
mean,
do?
even as we look forward to the new normal, we have to acknowledge that we don't necessarily know what the new normal is, And again, it has to do with uncertainty and the unknown. And there are some people who say, I love a challenge, and I'm hopeful about what change will bring. And then there are other people who become so mired in change, or who are so sort of desirous of the past and the way it was, that the idea of change is really very depressing. The organizing principle is that you just sort of have to be attentive to your own experience. And so we've put up the RISE slide, which is the sort of core concepts of our code of conduct. But this is a moment in time when the self-care aspect of how we are handling ourselves and thinking about ourselves at work is the most important, and not just ourselves at work. Self-care has become the number one priority here, because this is a long game. You have to take the long view, whether you're, feeling exhausted and overwhelmed and tired, or excited and future oriented about it. You still have to take the long view, and you still have to be in shape for it. And that's where self-care comes in. And I'm hoping that we spend a fair amount of time today, Cindy, on self-care, because these are very concrete things that we need to talk about, that it's easy to poo-poo and say these things aren't important. But these things are the most important right now.
Yeah, I think we talked on this last week with Fran Johnston when we were talking about emotional intelligence, and emotional self-awareness is so key. And we know, bottom line, emotional intelligence is one of our key skills as leaders that we need to be doing, and self-care came up. So many people shared some of the cool self-care things that they were doing, from meditation, gardening, exercising, reading, catching up with friends, a lot of bread making, time with family in socially distanced ways. Maybe I'll check it back in with the audience. What self-care measures did you take specifically since we last met last Thursday, lunch with leaders? I'd love to see in your chat how you're How you're doing. A good question from Lynn Cardona at Jody is, how do we get our staff to know how important self-care is? This is sometimes a very heroic place where people are like, I just have to focus on the other. I got to focus on my patients, my colleagues, my manager. You know, how do we make sure that everyone is getting this message? Thoughts on that?
We have to keep repeating this message. And again, we have to, you know, talk about simple strategies related to basic activities of daily living that will make us feel better during this. We have to, you know, the more the leadership brings up how important self-care is, the more the people who are responding to the leadership stop to think about it. But it's not just sort of a take care of yourself. We should get more concrete and give people tools on how to do this. I mean, Cindy, I'll tell you, I really like how at the beginning of this, where you ask people how they're feeling, because you're forcing people to take a moment and put words to what their experience is, which is, you know, it's really not very easy for us to do that. We're feeling, eh, we're feeling, you know, I don't know. Self-care tool to check in with yourself, and it does require emotional intelligence. So I was very glad when Fran suggested, you know, that is an important feature, and we need to assess how we're feeling so we know how to address how we're feeling. All that said, you know, just the basic premises of sleeping well and, you know, eating a healthy diet and doing some exercise each day, getting out of the house each day. One of the questions that was sent in, Cindy, before this was, you know, do you have any tips on sleeping? You know, a lot of people are having trouble sleeping during this time. And, you know, it's funny, in some ways we have more time and you'd think that sleeping better would be easier, but a lot of people are having sleep disturbances right now. And so, you know, there are some basic tips on how to get better sleep. One really important thing, particularly for the people working at home, is that we have these blurred boundaries now between what is work and what is home. And that's pretty unhealthy because, you know, when they bleed into each other and we don't have the natural boundaries that come with, for example, our commute to work, or, or, you know, the time that we have lunch, or the coffee we're going to have with somebody, or the fact that at this time every day we, you know, we do our afternoon rounds or whatever it is. We don't have these boundaries now. And it's falling to us to impose them upon ourselves. And we're not necessarily that good at it. As you mentioned before, it's really easy to stay in bed longer now. And why not? You know, you don't have to get up necessarily. But the fact is that you should be trying to wake yourself up at the same time each day. And you should be changing out of your pajamas into some clothes just to have a boundary that says, I'm not in my, you know, home space now. Now I'm at work. But where sleep is concerned, it's not great to have your work desk in your bedroom. And it's not great to bring your devices to bed with you. And it's really not great to look at your devices right before bed and, you know, burn that light into the backs of your eyes and then not sleep all night because that's what you did. There are some basic things. Make your bedroom your bedroom and, you know, choose a time to go to sleep and try to keep to a routine. Having routines during this time is incredibly important. Keep the room cool. A colder room is an easier room to sleep in. Try to get blackout shades or keep the room as dark as you possibly can. Try not to have a bright blaring clock in front of your face because then you're always watching and assessing how you're sleeping through the night. Just let yourself, you know, have bed space and make the, you know, the environment such that it's going to be conducive to sleep. And then again, rather than looking at your devices, do something that calms you down. And I know Fran mentioned the idea of deep breathing as something that's really important. You know, we've certainly heard so much over these past years about mindfulness and yoga and breathing and things like that. The fact is that it really helps. You know, it really helps to just slow yourself down. And it may not be that the ways that you've heard about doing it necessarily resound with you. You know, minding my breath has not always really kind of done much for me. But I found that rather than minding my breath, if I slow my breathing down and focus on my heart rate, that that really calms me down. So you got to customize these things to what you need. But there is no substitute for slowing yourself down, emptying out your head, doing so at a bedtime in a room that's not kind of, you know, shoving stimuli in your face to make you anxious and feel like you're working, and make the conditions as good as possible to get to sleep and then hopefully enjoy better sleep. And obviously, don't eat a lot before bed. Alcohol before bed is not a great idea. You know, there are obviously those parts, but we cannot underestimate the importance of sleep. We just can't.
I think those tips are really helpful. I saw Dr. Eileen Rosen, who is a sleep expert, has joined us today. Eileen, if you have any additional tips that you'd add to Jody's list, I'd love to have you share in the chat. So many people really are resonating with some of the things that you're saying, Jody, in terms of how it's hard to have some boundaries between work life from home and work life generally speaking. Many people are doing meditation and working on their breathing and getting out, and a lot of really positive comments around the self-care that people took. What about those that aren't taking good care of themselves? How do we know when that starts to show up, either within ourselves or within those that we're working closely with? What are the signs and symptoms that someone has not taken the self-care seriously?
Right. Well, this is a slide based upon the mental health first aid evidence-based program that was actually developed for the police, so that people who don't necessarily work in the mental health field can recognize when someone is having some psychological difficulties. And you can see that you know, some of these are very vague and things that all of us experience at some point, and some of them are much more serious, like suicidality. And again, you know, we can't underestimate the role of making a point of checking in with ourselves on how we're doing. But again, as leaders, it's important to look around us and see how our team is doing and check in with our team in terms of how things are going. Now, I'm not suggesting that if someone, you know, looks down, that you as a leader should run and say, "What's the matter? You look depressed today. What's going on?" That's not going to work. It's going to be intrusive, right? And it's not going to be well received. But to be able to, like, you know, sit down and with your team in a huddle and say, "How's everybody doing? I'm finding that, you know, this is dragging on for me. How are you guys doing?" Or even if there is someone who you're concerned about, you know, rather than to sit down and say, "I'm concerned about you," to sit down and say, this is really tough, isn't it? Just to get people talking. You know, not everyone's going to want to open up at work or with you or whatever, but just sort of starting the conversation is very important. And again, we cannot underestimate the importance of making sure that people are aware of the incredible breadth of resources that we have developed and that they can all be accessed anonymously. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more later.
We are.
But, you know, this is a very, you know, broad list. And, you know, again, you might see this in everyone and yourself around you. You know, everything is on a spectrum. And I think it's just important to use some of these, you know, points as things to look for just in yourself and the people around you in terms of having a harder time than others might
really, Yeah, this is a great list. Some people in the chat are saying, "Oh my God, I better do some new self-care routines because I'm seeing some of my own behavior show up on this chart." I also wanted to point out that Dr. Rosen has also reinforced many of Jody's sleep tips as well as provided a few more. So take a look at the chat if you're not sleeping as well as you normally do. So what do we do if we see some of our colleagues or others having some of these symptoms?
Yeah, so like I said, I think that, you know, rather than barrage them with, you know, "You don't look like you're feeling so well," because that can really close people down, I think opening, making check-ins a part of the usual conversation, posting in very, very visible places, that resources that are available. Maybe you as a leader yourself going on to Cobalt and checking it out and talking with your team about how easy it is to use, or maybe having used it yourself. You can access one of our, if you don't feel like you as a leader are comfortable having these kinds of conversations, you can access one of our supportive group interventions where a facilitator can come and just say, how's everybody doing? These are some common things that we're seeing, and we just want to check in with you. That's a great way to remind people to stop and check in.
While your video is frozen, let me go to the participant. Your video just froze, Jode, so I'm going to go to the participants and ask a question. Participants, are you seeing people act out, or are you seeing people act in unprofessional ways? What kind of behavior are you seeing manifest from those who may not be taking as good of care of themselves as they could or should be? Obviously, we'll keep it anonymous, but are you seeing people act out, and what does it look like if they do? We'd love to have you share your experiences, and maybe Jody could give us some tips on handling some of these specific scenarios. It looks like we've lost Jody. Jody, can you hear me? Let's just give it a minute, but I'd love to hear your thoughts in the chat in terms of what you're seeing if people are not taking good care of themselves. Jody, can you hear me? All right, so this is an interesting challenge. First time we've had this. Let's see if we can get her back. In the meantime, I'd love to have your tips for handling some of these folks. All right. Hi, welcome back.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
I was sorry about the panic attack, but I think we handled it in the chat. So if you just look at the chat, we're seeing some scenarios. There are some people who are low energy. They're seeing some people who are more negative in terms of their response. Like it's a stress response of coming across very negatively, withdrawal, difficulty concentrating. Let's talk a little bit about the negative Nelly. Some people are just a little bit more pessimistic in their worldview than others, and that can come across. They'll tell you all the reasons why something won't work. And now I think some of those people are experiencing some of those negative feelings even more strongly, and it can come across as resistance to change or resistance to anything. Tips on how you handle a scenario like that. Sounds like some people are dealing with that.
Yeah, so I think an important thing to note is that what we're generally seeing across the board is that whatever people usually are like, they're more like it now. It's almost like the volume on our personalities has been turned way up. And so if I'm a Debbie Downer, it's going to be very hard for me to kind of capture the silver lining on some of this stuff. And again, I would suggest that having a conversation and saying, this is such a hard time. Let's try to see the positive. And I don't think a real Debbie Downer is going to respond to that. They might say, I know, I always see the glass as half empty, but they're not necessarily going to be able to independently, in giving them feedback, they might stop it for a moment, but if it's their natural tendency. But if you can convey that negativism is, it's so hard for people to stay positive now, and that natural tendency towards negativism is actually causing a little bit more trouble than usual now, and perhaps ask them if they would consider doing some of the cognitive behavioral interventional work that's available through some of our experts at the Center for the treatment and study of anxiety and other groups through the COBOL platform. You know, this is probably a lifetime way of handling stress. But again, this is sort of a moment in time where it's really easy to access some tools to help with these things. And I can't imagine that any Debbie Downer type of person wants to stay that way. I think they would like to be able to see the silver lining, and this could be an opportunity to get people over the hump of not, you know, wanting to take that look at themselves, but maybe doing it right now.
I think that's really helpful. I've also noticed that there are people who are type A, and it's really hard because they want to control the outcomes of things, and yet it's so uncertain and ambiguous and complicated, and it's not the normal playbook, that people are kind of moving into a more obsessive kind of way. Yes. Are you seeing that? Are you hearing about that? Is that a
Absolutely.
Common scenario?
It's exceedingly common. You know, like I said, we're seeing people with their personality on high volume. And the people who might be obsessive or more micromanaging at baseline are really, really trying to control this uncertainty. Again, like I said, nobody likes change. Nobody likes the unknown. And people who have more controlling personalities are particularly disturbed right now and having a hard time. And so this is why we're seeing a lot of emails that are like tomes of material, you know, and flooding of inboxes with tremendously detailed items, because you know, people who feel that they need to get these items in control. And of course, many of these items do need to be clarified and elucidated and written down. But, you know, rather than overwhelm everybody with, you know, a tremendous, let's say, policy in an email, you know, to maybe kind of collapse it into a document that says, I've attached this document. Just even the visual shock of just seeing a 17-page email, it exhausts a lot of people. But for the people who are more kind of obsessive about it, to try to have them kind of realize the impact of that need to discuss every detail on other people who may be having different experiences, it's important. I've actually had probably, I mean, a half dozen of these cases from just the past 3 or 4 months come to mind, of conversations I've had with people who say, but I have to get the information out, and helping them with, you know, different ways that maybe they don't have to do drafts 1 through 700, you know, and share it with everybody, but perhaps, you know, have a product to share and do it in a less overwhelming way. And also perhaps to help them to maybe not have to get so involved in all of the details as they are.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's very helpful. And I'm hearing from the chat, they're like, oh, thank God we're talking about this, because it's not just me seeing that. As an organization, I mean, you have a really cool job. You're like the bat phone when people are acting unprofessionally. You're like there to answer the phone and come to the rescue of leaders. Are we seeing more incidents of poor professionalism? Are we seeing an increase in safety nets with these types of things?
Yeah, we are absolutely seeing.
So we're not just imagining it.
No, we're not just imagining it. And again, this is reflected nationally. I speak to my colleagues who do this kind of work across the country. And again, the people who have behavioral difficulties at baseline are having more of the same behavioral difficulties now. What's different about this is that people who have never had behavioral issues at work are also having some behavioral issues at work. And so we really have to differentiate between people who are just so stressed that they're just kind of bringing a lower frustration threshold with them to work right now, versus people who have chronic issues with this. And so I wanted to mention just out of interest, a study out of Italy on healthcare workers that showed that 50% of the healthcare workers in this study developed PTSD, 25% developed major depression, another 20% developed an anxiety disorder. This is serious stuff for many people. I mean, there of course are people who are having a fantastic time with all of the change that COVID has brought to their lives. But, you know, the emotional effects are relatively significant for a lot of people. And so when someone is acting out in some way at work, I think the first step is to kind of, if they've never done this before, to be like, wow, you know, what's going on, and do we need to kind of be helpful here? Or it may be that it's someone who's always had these behavioral difficulties, but it's really, really happening a lot. And again, it's probably both driven by this increased stress that we're seeing. And so, you know, versus at baseline when we might intervene immediately, I think empathy has a bigger role here because we're seeing a lot of people who are having these symptoms at work for the first time. You know, it's common maybe at home with our families when we're, you know, cranky or having a hard time to snap out, but you know, maybe we never do that at work. And then suddenly during this particular time, we're finding that we're snapping out at work too. You know, just the feedback, you know, you seem like you're kind of really crispy with people lately. I don't know if you're aware. And just starting that conversation. And is there anything, you know, you need or anything that I can do to be helpful? All that said, like I said, there are people who have trouble with acting out in some way at baseline, and they're just simply doing more of it now. And I think that for the first period of time, again, understanding the profound stress that a lot of this has brought, giving them a little bit of room, has been a helpful thing to do. But at some point, and of course, we all have to decide, each case brings its own nuance, but at some point, you have to intervene anyway, even though we're in the middle of this. We're seeing, you know, definitely the micromanagers having trouble with wanting to control more. Another big thing we're seeing, Cindy, is people who just are what I like to call above the law. You know, well, you may have decided that this is the policy, but I know better, or, you know, based upon my work or my reading, I know that this is in fact the way to do it, and this is how I'm going to do it. You know, blah de blah de blah, and you know, those that can cause quite a bit of trouble.
You know, it almost sets us up as leaders in the perfect storm because if we're not really focused on our own self-care, we know our empathy and compassion goes down. And then our teams are experiencing more stress, as are we. And so it's so hard because we've got to almost like be handling these situations in ideal ways when people act up. And it's so hard because we're tired and we don't have the normal resilience that we have.
Right.
So maybe it would be helpful if we talk through how to address some of these situations in a step-by-step formula. So we have a slide. Can you walk us through these steps around how to address the behavior? So we've talked a lot about if someone starts to act a little crispy, that pulling them aside, asking them how they're doing, getting some feedback really helps. Let's say it's a little bit even beyond that. Can you walk us through these tips?
Yeah, so you offered a great segue by talking about how much harder it is to empathize and how much harder it is to manage yourself and your own resilience. So when you're faced with something that appears to be causing trouble, the first step, and it's always the first step, but particularly now, is you've got to check yourself. I mean, is it in fact that you have a lower threshold right now because you are not feeling so well, so that things around you are more annoying than they usually might be? Or is it that the individual who's causing you trouble is someone who really always has kind of been under your, you know, under your skin, and you just don't have the reserve to not jump at this person right now and in wanting to give them feedback? So the first step is check yourself. Is the thing that you think needs to be intervened with, in fact, necessary for it? Is it objectively something that needs to be intervened with? So that's a really, 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 really important step.
I think so too, because sometimes I'm like, dude, it's you. Like, that's not out of realm of normalcy. I'm
Right.
just sensitive to it right now. And, you know, I think that's really good advice.
And sometimes, like I said, it, you know, this person reminds me of someone that I could not stand in high school, and everything that they do just drives me crazy. You know, you have to factor for these things. The second one is name the beast, and this we mentioned this already. It is so hard for us to actually put words to the feelings that we're having. so many of the referrals I get are just like, this person's being a jerk, or I don't like how this person's acting. Well, how are they acting? They're just being a jerk. You know, we have a lot of trouble with the language of what's causing us trouble. And that's why I said I like your exercise of what are your emotions today? Because the more we practice putting words to our emotions, the easier it is to identify those emotions within ourselves and to identify those affects in the people around us. And the other thing is that until you name the behavior that's causing trouble, there's almost no way you're going to be able to intervene with it. I mean, how do I intervene with jerk? You know, it's not going to work.
Fran kind of talked about the emotional spectrum and all of those various words around emotion, and that almost kind of being compared to how many words there are for snow in Alaska. Yeah. So I think, I'm fine. It represents about 15 different emotions that someone can be feeling, or I'm okay when we've got to get a little bit more refined with our language. That's the third step.
So the third step is, try to empathize. And again, this is, really relevant now because we're all experiencing this emotional maelstrom, but these tips are important all the time. When someone's acting in a way that you don't like or you don't understand, a big question has to be, why are they doing it? Why in this particular situation would they choose to behave this way? And what does it mean for them? Why are they doing it? And make the assumption that they're not doing it because they're malicious or because they're trying to hurt you. Make the assumption that this is how they handle stress, and trying to be empathic to why that may be. I mean, temporal things might be going on. You may find somebody who's been doing just fine, but you find out that, they lost a friend or a colleague or a family member, or maybe the home situation with the kids is really starting to drive them crazy. Try to get some kind of information to be able to empathize with what the other person may be doing. And then when we say call out the behavior, this is really mostly to remind people that early intervention is important always, because when you don't intervene early, number one, you don't give people the opportunity to know that their behavior is causing trouble, when in 80% of cases, people don't know that their behavior is causing trouble, even if it seems so incredibly egregious to you. So you're not giving them the opportunity to right what they're doing wrong because they don't know it's wrong, or maybe they think they can get away with it, but you need to tell them that they're not, whatever it may be. But the longer you just sort of stick your head in the sand and hope they're going to stop behaving this way, the longer it's going to last, because people tend to do the same things again and again and again. So when I say call it out, I don't necessarily mean, in the middle of a blue jeans call to say you're really acting horribly and you have to stop. But to find a way in a somewhat expeditious manner to be able to give feedback to this person, so that they can have an opportunity to write what they're doing. And then the last tip, I'm sorry.
The ostrich approach is not so effective here. This isn't the time to put our heads in the sand, whether there's a crisis or no crisis. By the way, people really love the term crispy.
Oh, it's I'm seeing a lot of crispy.
Give me the last step.
And the last step is just keep it short and be direct. I like to say, find your inner New Yorker, find a way to say what you have to say in as few words as possible, because if you talk around something, first of all, the individual to whom you're talking senses your discomfort and it makes it a more uncomfortable interaction. Secondly, the more words you use, the more likely you are to lose the message that you're trying to convey. And particularly since some of these messages are difficult, if you give people a lot of words, you give them fodder to go home and permute what it was you said, and perhaps react to it later or get angry at it later. If you want to give feedback, give feedback. Keep it short. Be direct. A direct line from A to B, not a circle or a tangent or anything like that, so that people can actually hear what it is you have to say. It's going to have the best results.
I think that's really helpful. PMA has a ton of resources around giving real-time feedback, so I definitely would encourage you to take a look at the PMA talent development site for real-time feedback tips and strategies. What if it's your boss that's crispy, Jody? That puts you in a little bit of a different power dynamic. It's different if it's your employee or maybe even a peer, but what about if your boss has been working unrelenting hours? I'm not saying my boss, but anyone's boss. What if your boss is a little crispy? We had that come up on the Q&A.
Yeah,
Tips?
this is a
Same.
question I get all the time. Bosses are people too, and the data is the data, and the data says that about 80% of people will respond to feedback with, just stopping the behavior. I mean, if you look at all the studies on professional interventions, they all have about, an 80% success rate to start, because 80% of people will just stop what they're doing if you say, "I don't like what you're doing. It doesn't work here. It's not good for this culture. You know, it may work at home and it maybe it worked at your last job, but it's not working here." So bosses are part of that group and that data set. And I'm not denying that it may be much harder to give your boss feedback, but as a boss and as someone who has received feedback, I can tell you that it doesn't necessarily matter from whom it's coming if your ultimate goal is self-betterment. And I believe that ultimately our ultimate goals for ourselves tend to be to do better, and that we don't bring malice to work, and that we're not trying to upset people. So if somebody who was working for me came and said, "Jody, the feedback you're giving me on the work I'm doing is valid, but the way you're giving it to me is humiliating me and making me feel anxious and really unhappy about coming to work," why would I not take that feedback? Why would I not receive that? And so again, I'm not being naive and suggesting that you should, march up to your boss and say, "I think you're behaving in such an egocentric manner that it's causing trouble for." I'm not suggesting that, but I am suggesting that you should not shy away from giving feedback to somebody just because they are in a position of some authority around you.
Thanks. I think that's really well said. And again, we have a lot of tools and resources to help give real-time feedback because one of the things that we know is most impactful is when you actually prepare to have that conversation. So I'd love to hear from our audience. Which of these five strategies have you used? If you haven't used all of them, have you used some, all? And what kind of response have you received from your crispy friend, colleague, employee, family member that you've used some of these strategies on? Would love to hear some of these. And yes, I think Carrie, you can use these if you have a crispy boss. This is a similar type of approach to that.
Yeah,
Other
I mean,
what, sorry, Jude.
no, even if your boss is crispy, to be able to go up to your boss and say, I'm afraid to tell you, certain things, or I'm afraid to ask you questions sometimes because I'm afraid that you're going to snap at me. Again, if I heard that, I would not love it, but I would take it under advisement and I would monitor my behavior a little bit more moving forward. And I believe that I would appreciate that you told me that.
Good. A lot of people are finding these steps really successful. And thanks, Gretchen Kolb, for putting up the PMA info. Courage is one of the key competencies that we as leaders, we need courage, right? It takes guts to have these conversations with our employees to give them some feedback or our boss or our colleagues. So courage is something that we've got to dig deep and make sure we're bringing into our roles as leaders. This leadership stuff is not for the faint of heart. That's for certain, especially in a global pandemic. So
And
let's
I
talk
got
about.
to tell you, I have to
Oh,
tell
yeah,
you,
go ahead.
Cindy, I have to tell you that every time we do this, every time we give someone feedback and it's successful, it allows us to do it the next time. And it's really important for people to remember that even if you give someone feedback and in the moment it doesn't look like it worked, or maybe they responded defensively, you really can't underestimate the value of the fact that you've planted a seed, and that person may very well take that seed home with them and think about it. And even if you didn't get satisfaction in the moment, that person's behavior may change over time. So just collect these small victories every time you give someone feedback and it's positive, to give yourself the courage to do it more next time.
I think that's good. The other thing I want to say to our leaders who are joining us today is You've got to create space. You've got to ask for feedback. There are some people that want to give you feedback, but unless you invite it, if you create a safe space for it, they may be reticent. So the same things we're having the conversation right now, they may be thinking about you. So how can you put yourself in a position to make yourself open and invite in that conversation so your employees can be helping you with your own self-care and your own behavior? Joe, this has been such an impossibly difficult time, and you and Cecilia and the whole team have created some amazing tools. We'd be remiss if we didn't cover all the tools that are available to help people who are struggling, whether it's the people here in the leadership roles, whether it's their employees, friends, colleagues. Can you walk through the supports that are available?
Yeah, absolutely. So, big, huge shout out to Cecilia Livesey and Kelly Kugler from the Innovation Center for making this product available that they had been working on for a couple of years before any of this started, so that we have this digital platform. And huge shout out to the Department of Psychiatry. I know that's self-serving, but so be it, for being able to offer so many of these, and to the Office of Faculty Affairs for helping with the development of the Penn Medicine Together website. So the trick here was to develop something called stepped programming. We all like to receive our knowledge and our help in our own ways. I like to use the example of when you get a diagnosis of something. There are some people who all they want to do is run to the internet and look up as much as they can about this thing. They don't want to talk to anybody. They don't want to interact around it. They just want to learn something. And then there are people who absolutely must talk it through, or have an interaction, or maybe even, require some sort of medical intervention for whatever's going on with them. So step care is an escalating platform of offerings that range from, self-directed personal tools all the way up to psychotherapy, psychiatry, medication, everything like that. The Penn Medicine Together website has a number of resources of a variety of types, but the Penn COBOL platform as individual support, group support, and wellness content. The wellness content is going to be things like, blogging, doing things on your own time. And then the individual support may be checking in with a peer. It may be learning some of these mental health first aid tools and learning how to get some strategies for yourself with a resilience coach. Or it may be using our EAP program, or if things are getting, pretty serious or are lingering, you may want to sign up for psychotherapy or maybe even consideration of medication. The point is, all of this is accessible on your own time, and you can do it anonymously. I mean, I know in my field, one of the huge barriers is there's still a stigma and there's still embarrassment around this, which is why it was so important to make the anonymous function here. You can do all sorts of exploration on Cobalt without anyone ever knowing that you touched it, because you can do it all anonymously. And then there are people who, maybe because of isolation, or maybe because there's a situation in the team that they're much more interested in in an intervention for their groups. And so you might want to, again, as an individual, connect with others by learning coping strategies on some of the coping with COVID groups. You might want to do some of Michael Behm's mindfulness groups, which have been so helpful and successful for so many people. And then sometimes maybe there's going to be something acutely difficult or stressful where you might want a critical incident debrief in a group setting. All of this is available and immediately accessible
Awesome.
on the Penn COBOL platform. It's really a fantastic moment in time for this.
Thank you. I just can't thank you enough. So let me just say thanks for joining us today. You've given us so many great insights and tips. And I want to thank our audience in the remaining moments here of Lunch with Leaders for this week. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciated your great tips that you shared in the chat. So I wanted to say I look forward to seeing you at Lunch with Leaders next week. Our topic is going to be top tips for meaningful performance reviews during challenging times. The entire world has changed, and yet we still have to do performance reviews, and we can make the most of these conversations, even if you're in a virtual setting. So tune in next week. Michelle Weitzman Garcia, Gretchen Kolb will join us, two experts in this area. So I'm really grateful. Please take the survey to give us feedback of what additional topics you'd like us to cover during upcoming Lunch with Leaders. Make sure to remind yourself to log out of the polling function. And thank you so much for all you're doing. You bring such great intentionality, energy, passion, and commitment to your work. I'm so grateful. I look forward to seeing you next week at Lunch with Leaders. Take care, everyone.